Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we visit China. It's officially known as the People's Republic of China and has the largest population of any country in the world, over 1.3 billion people. The Great Wall of China is the largest man-made structure in the world, stretching over 5,500 miles and can be seen from space. And China is home to the giant panda. For further information about China for children, I suggest www.sciencekids.co.nz. Our first tale is a Chinese folk tale. It is called How Greed for a Trifling Thing Led a Man to Lose a Great One. Once upon a time, there was an old woman who had two sons, but her older son did not love his parents and left his mother and brother. The younger one served her so faithfully, however, that all the people spoke of his filial affection. One day it happened that there was a theatrical performance given outside the village. The younger son started to carry his mother there on his back so that she might look on. But there was a ravine before the village, and he slipped and fell down in the middle of it, and his mother was killed by the rolling stones, and her blood and flesh were sprinkled about everywhere. The son stroked his mother's corpse and wept bitterly. He was about to kill himself when, suddenly, he saw a priest standing before him. The priest said, "Have no fear, for I can bring your mother back to life again." And as he said so, he stooped, gathered up her flesh and bones, and had them together as they should be. Then he breathed upon them, and at once the mother was alive again. This made the son very happy, and he thanked the priest on his knees. Yet on a sharp point of rock, he still saw a bit of his mother's flesh hanging a bit, about an inch long. "That should not be left hanging there either," said he, and hid it in his breast. "In truth, you love your mother as a son should," said the priest. Then he bade the son give him the bit of flesh, kneaded a mannikin out of it, breathed upon it, and in a minute there it stood, a really fine-looking little boy. "His name is Small Prophet," said he, turning to the son, "and you may call him brother. You are poor and have not the wherewithal with which to nourish your mother. If you need something, Small Prophet can get it for you." The son thanked him once more, then took his mother on his back again and his new little brother by the hand and went home. And when he said to Small Prophet, "Bring meat and wine," then meat and wine were at hand at once, and steaming rice was already cooking in the pot. And when he said to Small Prophet, "Bring money and cloth," then his purse filled itself with money, and the chests were heaped up with cloth to the brim. Whatever he asked for, that he received. Thus, in the course of time, they came to be very well off indeed. But his older brother envied him greatly, and when there was another theatrical performance in the village, he took his mother on his back, by force, and went to it. And when he reached the ravine, he slipped purposely and let his mother fall into the depths, only intent to see that she really was shattered into fragments. And sure enough, his mother had had such a bad fall that her limbs and trunk were strewn around in all directions. He then climbed down, took his mother's head in his hands, and pretended to weep. And at once the priest was on hand again and said, "I can wake the dead to life again and surround white bones with flesh and blood." Then he did as he had done before, and the mother came to life again. But the older brother already had hidden one of her ribs on purpose. He now pulled it out and said to the priest, "Here's a bone left. What shall I do with it?" The priest took the bone, enclosed it in lime and earth, breathed upon it as he had done the other time, and it became a little man, resembling Small Prophet, but larger in stature. "His name is Great Duty," he told his older brother. "If you stick to him, he will always lend you a hand." The son took his mother back again, and Great Duty walked beside him. When he came to their courtyard door, he saw his younger brother coming out, holding Small Prophet in his arms. "Where are you going?" he said to him. His brother answered, "Small Prophet is a divine being who does not wish to dwell for all time among men. He wants to fly back to the heavens, and so I am escorting him." "Give Small Prophet to me. Don't let him get away," cried the older brother. Yet before he had ended his speech, Small Prophet was rising in the air. The older brother then quickly let his mother drop on the ground and stretched out his hand to catch Small Prophet. But he did not succeed, and now Great Duty, too, rose from the ground, took Small Prophet's hand, and together they ascended to the clouds and disappeared. Then the older brother stamped on the ground and said with a sigh, "Alas, I have lost my Great Duty because I was too greedy for a Small Prophet." Our next story is kind of like a Chinese version of Noah and the Ark. It is always interesting to see the similarities of stories in different cultures. Here is The Great Flood. Once upon a time, there was a widow who had a child, and the child was a kind-hearted boy of whom everyone was fond. One day he said to his mother, "All the other children have a grandmother, but I have none, and that makes me feel very sad." "We will hunt up a grandmother for you," said his mother. Now it once happened that an old beggar woman came to the house, who was very old and feeble, and when the child saw her, he said to her, "You shall be my grandmother." And he went to his mother and said, "There is a beggar woman outside whom I want for my grandmother." And his mother was willing and called her into the house, though the old woman was very dirty. So the boy said to his mother, "Come, let us wash grandmother." And they washed the woman. But she had a great many burrs in her hair, so they picked them all out and put them in a jar, and they filled the whole jar. Then the grandmother said, "Do not throw them away, but bury them in the garden, and you must not dig them up again before the great flood comes." "When is the great flood coming?" asked the boy. "When the eyes of the two stone lions in front of the prison grow red, then the great flood will come," said the grandmother. So the boy went to look at the lions, but their eyes were not yet red, and the grandmother also said to him, "Make a little wooden ship and keep it in a little box." And this the boy did. And he ran to the prison every day and looked at the lions, much to the astonishment of the people in the street. One day, as he passed the chicken butcher's shop, the butcher asked him why he was always running to the lions. And the boy said, "When the lions' eyes grow red, then the great flood will come." But the butcher laughed at him. And the following morning, quite early, the butcher took some chicken blood and rubbed it on the lion's eyes. When the boy saw that the lion's eyes were red, he ran swiftly home and told his mother and grandmother. And then his grandmother said, "Dig up the jar quickly and take the little ship out of its box." And when they dug up the jar, it was filled with the purest pearls, and the little ship grew larger and larger, like a real ship. Then the grandmother said, "Take the jar with you and get into the ship, and when the great flood comes, then you may save all the animals that are driven into it, but human beings, with their black heads, you are not to save." So they climbed into the ship, and the grandmother suddenly disappeared. Now it began to rain, and the rain kept falling more and more heavily from the heavens. Finally, there were no longer any single drops falling, but just one big sheet of water, which flooded everything. Then a dog came drifting along, and they saved him in their ship. Soon after came a pair of mice and their little ones, loudly squeaking in their fear, and these they also saved. The water was already rising to the roofs of the houses, and on one roof stood a cat, arching her back and mewing pitifully. They took the cat into the ship too. Yet the flood increased and rose to the tops of the trees. And in one tree sat a raven, beating his wings and cawing loudly, and him too they took in. Finally, a swarm of bees came flying their way. The little creatures were quite wet and could hardly fly, so they took the bees on their ship. At last, a man with black hair floated by on the waves. The boy said, "Mother, let us save him too." But the mother did not want to do so. Did not grandmother tell us that we must save no black-headed human beings? But the boy answered, We will save the man in spite of that. I feel sorry for him and cannot bear to see him drifting along in the water. So they also saved the man. Gradually, the water subsided. Then they got out of their ship and parted from the man and the beasts, and the ship grew small again, and they put it away in its box. But the man was filled with a desire for the pearls. He went to the judge and entered a complaint against the boy and his mother, and they were both thrown into jail. Then the mice came and dug a hole in the wall, and the dog came through the hole and brought them meat, and the cat brought them bread, so they did not have to hunger in their prison. But the raven flew off and returned with a letter for the judge. The letter had been written by a god, and it said, I wandered about in the world of men disguised as a beggar woman, and this boy and his mother took me in. The boy treated me like his own grandmother and did not shrink from washing me when I was dirty. Because of this I saved them out of the great flood, by means of which I destroyed the sinful city wherein they dwelt. Do you, O judge, free them, or misfortune shall be your portion. So the judge had them brought before him and asked what they had done and how they had made their way through the flood. Then they told him everything, and what they said agreed with the god's letter. So the judge punished their accuser and set them both at liberty. When the boy had grown up, he came to a city of many people, and it was said that the princess intended to take a husband. But in order to find the right man, she had veiled herself and seated herself in a litter, and she had had the litter, together with many others, carried into the marketplace. In every litter sat a veiled woman, and the princess was in their midst. And whoever hit upon the right litter, he was to get the princess for his bride. So the youth went there too. And when he reached the marketplace, he saw the bees whom he had saved from the great flood, all swarming about a certain litter. Up he stepped to it, and sure enough, the princess was sitting in it. And then their wedding was celebrated, and they lived happily ever afterward. The next story is about two household pets. Here is Why Dog and Cat Are Enemies. Once upon a time there was a man and his wife, and they had a ring of gold. It was a lucky ring, and whoever owned it always had enough to live on. But this they did not know, and hence sold the ring for a small sum. But no sooner was the ring gone than they began to grow poorer and poorer, and at last did not know when they would get their next meal. They had a dog and a cat, and these had to go hungry as well. Then the two animals took counsel together as to how they might restore to their owners their former good fortune. At length the dog hit upon an idea. They must have the ring back again, he said to the cat. The cat answered, The ring has been carefully locked up in the chest where no one can get at it. You must catch a mouse, said the dog, and the mouse must gnaw a hole in the chest and fetch out the ring, and if she does not want to, say that you will bite her to death and you will see that she will do it. This advice pleased the cat, and she caught a mouse. Then she wanted to go to the house in which stood the chest, and the dog came after. They came to a broad river, and since the cat could not swim, the dog took her on his back and swam across with her. Then the cat carried the mouse to the house in which the chest stood. The mouse gnawed a hole in the chest and fetched out the ring. The cat put the ring in her mouth and went back to the river where the dog was waiting for her and swam across with her. Then they started out together for home in order to bring the lucky ring to their master and mistress. But the dog could only run along the ground when there was a house in the way. He always had to go around it. The cat, however, quickly climbed over the roof, and so she reached home long before the dog and brought the ring to her master. Then her master said to his wife, What a good creature the cat is! We will always give her enough to eat and care for her as though she were our own child. But when the dog came home, they beat him and scolded him because he had not helped to bring home the ring again. And the cat sat by the fireplace, purred, and never said a word. Then the dog grew angry at the cat because she had robbed him of his reward, and when he saw her, he chased her and tried to seize her. and ever since that day, cat and dog are enemies. This last story actually tells us a lot about the ancient Chinese views on immortality. They too had a heaven and a hell, and many magic ways to visit both places. Here is The Kindly Magician. Once upon a time, there was a man named Du Tsi Chun. In his youth, he was a spendthrift and paid no heed to his property. He was given to drink and idling. When he had run through all his money, his relatives cast him out. One winter day, he was walking barefoot about the city with an empty stomach and torn clothes. Evening came on, and still he had not found any food. Without end or aim, he wandered about the marketplace. He was hungry, and the cold seemed well nigh unendurable. So he turned his eyes upward and began to lament aloud. Suddenly, an ancient man stood before him, leaning on a staff, who said, "What do you lack, since you complain so?" "I am dying of hunger," replied Du Tsi Chun, "and not a soul will take pity on me." The ancient man said, "How much money would you need in order to live in all comfort?" "If I had 50,000 pieces of copper, it would answer my purpose," replied Du Tsi Chun. The ancient said, "That would not answer." "Well, then, 1,000,000." "That is still too little." "Well, then, 3,000,000. The ancient man said, "That is well spoken." He fetched 1,000 pieces of copper out of his sleeve and said, "That is for this evening. Expect me tomorrow by noon at the Persian Bazaar." At the time set, Du Tsi Chun went there, and sure enough, there was the ancient, who gave him 3,000,000 pieces of copper. Then he disappeared without giving his name. When Du Tsi Chun held the money in his hand, his love for prodigality once more awoke. He rode pampered steeds, clothed himself in the finest furs, went back to his wine, and led such an extravagant life that the money gradually came to an end. Instead of wearing brocade, he had to wear cotton, and instead of riding horseback, he went to the dogs. Finally, he was again running about barefoot and in rags, as before, and did not know how to satisfy his hunger. Once more, he stood in the marketplace and sighed. But the ancient was already there, took him by the hand, and said, "Are you back already to where you were? That is strange. However, I will aid you once more." But Du Tsi Chun was ashamed and did not want to accept his help. Yet the ancient insisted and led him along to the Persian Bazaar. This time he gave him 10,000,000 pieces of copper, and Du Tsi Chun thanked him with shame in his heart. With money in hand, he tried to give time to adding to it and saving in order to gain great wealth. But as is always the case, it is hard to overcome ingrown faults. Gradually, he began to fling his money away again and gave free rein to all his desires, and once more his purse grew empty. In a couple of years, he was as poor as ever he had been. Then he met the ancient the third time, but he was so ashamed of himself that he hid his face when he passed him. The ancient seized his arm and said, "Where are you going? I will help you once more. I will give you 30,000,000, but if then you do not improve, you are past all aid." Full of gratitude, Du Tsi Chun bowed before him and said, "In the days of my poverty, my wealthy relatives did not seek me out. You alone have thrice aided me. The money you give me today shall not be squandered, that I swear, but I will devote it to good works in order to repay your great kindness. And when I have done this, I will follow you, if needs be, through fire and through water." The ancient replied, "That is right. When you have ordered these things, ask for me in the temple of Lao Tzu, beneath the 2 mulberry trees." Du Tsi Chun took the money and went to Yangqiao. There, he bought 100 acres of the best land and built a lofty house with many hundreds of rooms on the highway. Then he bought a burial place for his ancestors and supported his needy relations. Countless people were indebted to him for their livelihood. When all was finished, he went to inquire after the ancient in the temple of Lao Tzu. The ancient was sitting in the shade of the mulberry trees, blowing the flute. He took Dutsi Chun along with him to the cloudy peaks of the holy mountains of the west. When they had gone some 40 miles into the mountains, he saw a dwelling, fair and clean. It was surrounded by many-colored clouds, and peacocks and cranes were flying about it. Within the house was an herb oven 9 feet high. The fire burned with a purple flame, and its glow leaped along the walls. 9 fairies stood at the open, in which there was a glowing white stone, and a green dragon and a white tiger crouched beside it. Evening came. The ancient was no longer clad like an ordinary man, but wore a yellow cap and wide flowing garments. He took 3 pellets of the white stone, put them into a flagon of wine, and gave them to Dutsi Chun to drink. He spread out a tiger skin against the western wall of the inner chamber and bade Dutsi Chun sit down on it with his face turned toward the east. Then he said to him, "Now, beware of speaking a single word, no matter what happens to you, whether you encounter powerful gods or terrible demons, wild beasts or ogres, or all the tortures of the netherworld, or even if you see your own relatives suffer. For all these things are only deceitful images. They cannot harm you. Think only of what I have said, and let your soul be at rest." And when he had said this, the ancient disappeared. Then Dutsi Chun saw only a large stone jug full of clear water standing before him. Fairies, dragon, and tiger had all vanished. Suddenly he heard a tremendous crash, which made heaven and earth tremble. A man towering more than 10 feet in height appeared. He called himself the Great Captain, and he and his horse were covered with golden armor. He was surrounded by more than 100 soldiers, who drew their bows and swung their swords and halted in the courtyard. The giant called out harshly, "Who are you? Get out of my way!" Dutsi Chun did not move, and he returned no answer to his questions. Then the great giant flew into a passion and cried with a thundering voice, "Chop off his head!" But Dutsi Chun remained unmoved, so the giant went off, raging. Then a furious tiger and a poisonous serpent came up roaring and hissing. They made as though to bite him and leaped over him. But Dutsi Chun remained unperturbed in spirit, and after a time they too dissolved and vanished. Suddenly a great rain began to fall in streams. It thundered and lightninged incessantly, so that his ears rang and his eyes were blinded. It seemed as though the house would fall. The water rose up to a flood in a few moments' time and streamed up to the place where he was sitting. But Dutsi Chun remained motionless and paid no attention to it, and after a time the water receded. Then came a great demon with the head of an ox. He set up a kettle in the middle of the courtyard in which bubbled boiling oil. He caught Dutsi Chun by the neck with an iron fork and said, "If you will tell me who you are, I will let you go." Dutsi Chun shut his eyes and kept silent. Then the demon picked him up with the fork and flung him into the kettle. He withstood the pain, and the boiling oil did not harm him. Finally, the demon dragged him out again and drew him down the steps of the house before a man with red hair and a blue face who looked like the prince of the netherworld. The latter cried, "Dragon is wife!" After a time, Dutsi Chun's wife was brought on in chains. Her hair was torn, and she wept bitterly. The demon pointed to Dutsi Chun and said, "If you will speak your name, we will let her go." But he answered not a word. Then the prince of evil had the woman tormented in all sorts of ways, and she pleaded with Dutsi Chun, "I have been your wife now for 10 years. Will you not speak one little word to save me? I can endure no more." And the tears ran in streams from her eyes. She screamed and scolded, yet he spoke not a word. Thereupon the prince of evil shouted, "Chop her into bits!" And there before his eyes it seemed as though she were really being chopped to pieces. But Dutsi Chun did not move. "The scoundrel's measure is full," cried the prince of evil. "He shall dwell no longer among the living. Off with his head!" And so they killed him, and it seemed to him that his soul fled his body. The ox-headed demon dragged him down into the nether regions where he tasted all the tortures in turn. But Du Cixun remembered the words of the ancient, and the tortures too seemed bearable, so he did not scream and said not a word. Now he was once more dragged before the Prince of Evil. The latter said,
"As punishment for his obstinacy, this man shall come to earth again in the shape of a woman."
The demon dragged him to the wheel of life, and he returned to earth in the shape of a girl. He was often ill, had to take medicine continually, and was pricked and burned with hot needles, yet he never uttered a sound. Gradually, he grew into a beautiful maiden, but since he never spoke, he was known as the Dumb Maid. A scholar finally took him for his bride, and they lived in peace and good fellowship. And a son came to them who, in the course of 2 years, was already beyond measure wise and intelligent. One day, the father was carrying the son on his arm. He spoke jestingly to his wife and said, "When I look at you, it seems to me that you are not really dumb. Won't you say one little word to me? How delightful it would be if you were to become my speaking rose." The woman remained silent. No matter how he might coax and try to make her smile, she would return no answer. Then his features changed. "If you will not speak to me, it is a sign that you scorn me, and in that case, your son is nothing to me either." And with that, he seized the boy and flung him against the wall. But since Du Cixun loved this little boy so dearly, he forgot the ancient's warning and cried out, "Oh, oh!" And before the cry had died away, Du Cixun awoke as though from a dream and found himself seated in his former place. The ancient was there as well. It must have been about the fifth hour of the night. Purple flames rose wildly from the oven and flared up to the sky. The whole house caught fire and burned like a torch. "You have deceived me," cried the ancient. Then he seized him by the hair and thrust him into the jug of water, and in a minute the fire went out. The ancient spoke, "You overcame joy and rage, grief and fear, hate and desire, it is true. But love you had not driven from your soul. Had you not cried out when the child was flung against the wall, then my elixir would have taken shape, and you would have attained immortality. But in that last moment, you failed me. Now it is too late. Now I can begin brewing my elixir of life once more from the beginning, and you will remain a mere mortal man." Du Cixun saw that the oven had burst, and that instead of the philosopher's stone, it held only a lump of iron. The ancient man cast aside his garments and chopped it up with the magic knife. Du Cixun took leave of him and returned to Yangchao, where he lived in great affluence. In his old age, he regretted that he had not completed his task. He once more went to the mountain to look for the ancient, but the ancient had vanished without leaving a trace. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at gima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to jolly old England, the land of King Arthur and the Round Table, fairies, goblins, and quaint countrysides. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon.